We are pleased to inform you that you have a place at Potterversity.
Potterversity, a Potter Studies podcast. This is episode 5, Uncle Vernon. For joining us at Potterversity. Today, Emily Strand and I will talk with Tim Jennings about Vernon Dursley. I am Katie McDaniel, professor of history at Marietta College in Marietta, Ohio, and co-editor of Harry Potter for Nerds 2.
And I am Emily Strand, instructor of comparative religions at Mount Carmel College and author of several Harry Potter essays.
Today, we are going to be talking about one of the villains of the Harry Potter series, Uncle Vernon. Emily, do you have any empathy for the Dursleys who had their nephew rather unceremoniously dropped upon their doorstep? Do you feel some empathy for them? Is this going to be a hard sell for Tim?
Yeah. You know, I think I have more empathy for them in sort of a realistic sense than I do in like a metaphorical sense. I think if I'm taking the story very metaphorically, I have zero empathy for them. But I think if I'm taking it on a realistic, there's a lot of features about them and what happens to them that, you know, they didn't have a whole lot of control over. And, you know, I mean, there's something to be said for thinking it of things from their point of view.
Okay. And when you say metaphorically, you mean in terms of like how they serve literally in the story?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they're like the, you know, as Professor McGonagall says in the film version of Sorcerer's Stone, she says, you know, these are the worst sort of muggles, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, I've long thought they're there to kind of show us the other end of the spectrum of magic, you know? And they're there to kind of be this extremely unimaginative, anti-imaginative force in the series. And of course, it's a force that gets overwhelmed by the magic of the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely oppressive and I think abusive also, we would say. Mm-hmm. But if you're actually looking at them and trying to humanize them, I think you can find some little ways to do that. And we are going to turn to our special guest for this episode, Tim Jennings, to help us try to figure out particularly Vernon Dursley on this episode. Tim is an independent scholar with a master's degree in English from California State University Fullerton and currently manages social media for the Harry Potter Academic Conference, which is how we met. Welcome to Potterversity, Tim.
Thanks for having me.
So Tim, how did you get interested in Harry Potter scholarship and what aspects of the series in general are most interesting to you?
I guess my first taste of Harry Potter scholarship was actually when I went back to school to finish my undergrad, and House at Fullerton had a Harry Potter class in the English department. So I decided to take it. It sounded like a pretty fun class, and that was my first time really jumping into the text and examining it. And the final paper I wrote for that class was actually the first talk I gave, or was the basis for the first talk I gave at the conference in 2016.
Oh,
expanded
cool.
And everything. So, but it wasn't until I started grad school in 2016 when I saw the Chestnut Hills Harry Potter Festival trending on Facebook shortly after my intro to grad studies professor was talking to us about the importance of going to conferences and everything. And I saw that there was a conference that took place in Chestnut Hill before the festival took place, that I decided, hey, I think this would be pretty fun. I used to live out in Pennsylvania, so I could kind of get best of both worlds by going out there and making a trip out of it.
You know what I love about that, Tim? It sort of shows you that, you know, taking an undergrad class in Harry Potter can be really inspiring. It fits within a broader program of study, and then it can also lead you to, you know, all these other opportunities.
Yeah, so going to the conference that year really opened my eyes to just how much scholarship there was. I mean, that was 4 years ago, so that was the fifth year for the conference. So the fact that it wasn't just a one-time thing and wasn't in the first or second year, but it was a pretty established conference, really showed me how much was going on with it, and the fact that it was interdisciplinary. There are certain aspects of literary scholarship that I'm not particularly fond of. I love psychological character studies, and there are still literary scholars that use Freud, which, I mean, everything he said has been proven wrong, psychologically speaking. So that doesn't sit well with me. But the fact that there are psychology professors at the conference, history, and so many other... I mean, the first year I went there was when they had the ex-CIA agent that was presenting with someone. And so just the variety of subjects and disciplines just really kind of blew my mind. Yeah, so I decided to keep going. I missed 1 year just because of life, and then was able to come back last couple conferences. As for aspects that interest me, I mean, I love character studies. It's just always been one of my favorite things to do with literary analysis. And one thing that Harry Potter has plenty of is characters to analyze. Mm-hmm. And I also like going to kind of unexamined corners of a text. And that's another, there's no shortage of corners of Harry Potter that one can look at. So there's plenty of things in the series for me to take a look at and just kind of see what there is to discover.
I'm curious, Tim, what was your first foray, that first paper? What was that about?
The first one that I presented at the conference was an examination of Dumbledore and how he's a pretty terrible person, despite his good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I examined how he, how manipulative and secretive he was, and how that when Harry returned to Hogwarts, he had probably my favorite kind of discovery in that paper was that when he returned to Hogwarts for the last time, he had to choose Gryffindor over Slytherin again when he made the choice to trust his fellow students rather than be secretive like Dumbledore, which is a very Slytherin approach to things. So
very interesting.
Yeah, that was the first one that I gave at the conference. And the first paper I wrote for that class as an undergrad was the parallels between Voldemort and Satan. I mean, I wasn't the first person to make that parallel, but it was fun diving into both the Harry Potter series and the Bible and just kind of showing how Rowling was picking up on both and going all the way back to Genesis 3 with the serpent and everything, and have a lot of fun with that.
Cool.
Yeah. I feel like I feel like Beatrice Groves would have some things to say about that in terms of some of the work that she's done as well with, I think, Milton, Harry Potter and Milton, which is really interesting stuff.
Yeah,
well, that's great. And I was going to say, before you talked about the Voldemort-Satan thing, which is definitely, like, that's definitely a reading in line with what we already think of Voldemort's character. But I was going to say, you seem like maybe you like a little contrarian reading of characters sometimes.
Oh, yeah, I do. I enjoy that, but I make sure that I've at least got some grounding for what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
as much as I enjoy getting reactions out of people, I do make sure that I'm not just saying things for the sake of saying things, that there's actually textual evidence for it.
Yeah, that's good.
My professor's made a point, as they should do, of making sure that you build the case.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, so often you can get kind of an idea of an interpretation, and that idea just runs away with you. But if you always have to come back to the text, you can be drawn back into some sort of little disciplinary restraint there that's important.
Right. One thing that has stuck with me was when there's a Shakespeare teacher at Cal State Fullerton that I had several times because I love Shakespeare and this professor. And she said that a sign that a work is good literature and great literature is if there are multiple interpretations. Yeah. So I think that helped motivate me to find those contrarian views. I mean, I usually just do my thing and then, I think my brain just naturally looks for contrarian stuff, but that's going to help motivate me for the types of analyses that I take.
You did a paper for the 2020 Harry Potter Academic Conference, which was virtual, on Vernon Dursley. So intriguing. Why Uncle Vernon? What about him was interesting to you?
I kind of find it funny how I decided to do my talk on Vernon. I was having a hard time figuring out what I would do for 2020. And so one day I just grabbed the first book and decided I was going to just open it up and just kind of see where that took me. And it just happened that it opened up to the first page. And as soon as I read that first sentence about how normal the Dursleys wanted to be perceived, that I just immediately knew I wanted to look at why that was so important to them. And when I just read that entire chapter and realized that most of that chapter is dedicated to the point of view of Vernon, who is the most non-magical character in the series, I knew I had to really dig into the character and figure out what was going on. Because that need for him to be normal, I mean, everyone wants to be normal, but not to the extent that Vernon is. And yeah, so that was a huge part for me deciding to go in there. And as I started to research him, I just saw signs that it just struck me as someone that had some sort of dark past that drove him to be so normal, that his past in whatever way was abnormal, and that drove him to want to be normal. So I started thinking since he was so abusive to Harry and to Dudley, that made me think about the idea of cyclical abuse in a family, and I started taking notes to kind of put it all together, and found psychology papers that talked about it. And yeah, I just became really fascinated by the character as I started to put this all together. And yeah, there's more depth to him than I had expected.
There's something abnormal about how much he and Petunia both cling to normality. You know, that there's something kind of pathological and oppressive about their degree of conformity, and that it's all right there in that first sentence. And and so the first sentence, just because we all love the first sentence, I have it here. Mr. and Mrs. Dursley of Number 4 Privet Drive were proud to say they were perfectly normal, thank you very much. They were the last people you'd expect to be involved in anything strange or mysterious, because they just didn't hold with such nonsense. Which I think is such an interesting little package there.
It is an interesting package. And Tim, I think you really hit on something that's vitally important. And it's that almost that entire, in fact, that entire first chapter is told from Vernon's point of view.
Yeah.
And I did not even recognize this on my first, second, third, or fifth time through the book. It was only when I started writing fiction myself and began to really think hard about point of view, what it means, what you can do within point of view and what you can't do within point of view, that I realized how bizarre it is that she starts with Vernon's point of view from the perspective of the entire series. You know what I mean?
Right.
So why do you think she does that? And how do you think it affects the reader's experience of the story?
I think the main reason she does that, I think it's kind of gives the real world aspect to the series that, if it started straight on with, I mean, the Wizarding War and the death of the Potters, or just Harry's first day at Hogwarts, or with the Weasleys or Dumbledore. I mean, that would have made it harder to sell the idea that the two worlds were existing side by side. Mm-hmm. But instead, by showing us Vernon going about his day-to-day life, going to work and seeing these wizards celebrating the fall of Voldemort, the reader is able to kind of put themselves in Vernon's shoes in a way, just to see how, I mean, because if I were driving, going to work, and I saw kept seeing these people in robes celebrating about something, I would certainly think that was weird, which Vernon does too. And I mean, granted, I'm looking at this from the point of view of a now 39-year-old rather than the primary demographic of the Harry Potter series. But I think it does show how it helps with the transition into the magical world of Hogwarts and the Wizarding Society.
And how interesting that maybe you think Rowling wants us to have Vernon's perspective, because we're pretty close to Uncle Vernon in terms of the way that we would react to that.
Right.
And so trying to just reinforce that in us, but also to show us maybe there's something a little unsavory about it with this response.
Oh, very. I mean, yeah, I think what you said about putting us in Vernon's shoes is really important, because then we quickly realize that those are shoes we want to get out of fast, and that we want to be the more interesting place to be and the more imaginative place to be is in Harry's shoes.
Right.
And I think that transition is really important. She's kind of pulling us in. She's inviting us into a totally different way of experiencing reality. And that first chapter really helps to make it, you know, an invitation we want to accept.
Yeah. And one thing that stood out to me with that first chapter is that Vernon is not, I mean, we don't see full Vernon in this chapter. I mean, he's not abusive. He hasn't unleashed mm-hmm. the full anger that we see later on in the series. In fact, I mean, all we see really is that he likes a normal, boring life. He has his routine. He loves his wife. He loves his kid.
His job in the drill factory.
Right. I mean, we see hints of how angry he gets. It talks about how he shouts at his subordinates and everything. But when he's kind of realizing that that what's going on has something to do with the Potters, he's very careful about how he brings it up with Petunia. So we see, because he knows it would upset her. So it also lays the groundwork for the fact that he legitimately and honestly loves his wife and does not want her to be unhappy.
Hmm.
And stood out to me when I was reading through this and preparing the talk, is that yes, Vernon is a terrible person with the stuff he does, but there is good underneath that. And that made me wonder why do those two, like good and the abuse, exists side by side. In that opening chapter, he is far more relatable than he is in the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm.
I also get that Rowling, if she started the series with him being as monstrous as he is later in the series, a lot of people would not have gone very far in the series. You
know, we'd have flung the book across the room.
Right. But at the same time, starting this, if she's going to go with that Muggle perspective, I mean, she didn't really have very many other people that she could have used. Because if she just started with a random Muggle observing this and then who never showed up for the rest of the series, I mean, I would have been wondering, so what happened to that person who never shows up? Like, why? I was thinking that Petunia would have been the only other option to really show, but I think Vernon, since Vernon had absolutely no connection to Wizard Society, mm-hmm. he was the only like choice of the cast of characters.
Yeah.
That's
Petunia's not exactly a blank slate with regard to interfacing with the wizarding world.
Right. Not that we know that at the, you know, until the end, no, but she's able to keep that secret some because our entree is through Vernon instead. Now, you called your paper The Tragedy of Vernon Dursley. So what's the tragedy with him, do you think, as you're reading into his character to find out about this balance of that there's some, you know, there's something in him that is good and yet he is so abusive. What's the tragedy there, do you think, Tim?
Whatever abuse or whatever it was that damaged him when he was younger and led him to become who he was, and the fact that he was never able to fully escape it, I think is what the tragedy really is for his character. Because, well, Dudley was ultimately able to break that cycle of abuse. Vernon was not. And Vernon, I mean, if you really look into everything he did with his life, I mean, he's a pretty intelligent man who had a pretty successful career. I mean, he manages despite being Vernon, he starts a family, buys a house, has his career, raises a child, and is even able to send him off to a private school. I mean, if you make a list of what makes up a successful life, he's able to check those things off, not in the best way, but it seems like from his perspective and his attempt to have a normal life, he's accomplishing a lot of it, but he's never able to fully break free from the abuse that I believe he suffered as a child, I find tragic.
Yeah. So where do you see the evidence of that abuse in the Harry Potter stories? I mean, we don't, I suppose you probably had to, you know, go through the fine tooth comb to find, you know, a little bit of the backstory on Vernon, but where did you find some of that hint of abuse?
I guess there's kind of two things that really convinced me of this. So we're told in the books, we're told, I mean, nothing about his past, but it was really when I started to read the psychology papers about abuse and what it does to a person and how it manifests itself later in their life that I realized that Vernon had all of these traits. I mean, with his anger issues and his just lack of control, and there's just, when I made a list of all these symptoms, it was he met all of them in the way he acts. So there was that. He has all the signs of it. And then I was really struck by the fact that we're never told anything about his parents. There's no line about his parents. I mean, even if they had died beforehand, Rowling could have thrown a line in there. So that made me wonder why they never talked about him. Especially when Marge shows up, neither of them talk about their parents, and kind of in the context of having the signs of being abused, made me wonder if they didn't talk about the parents because they were terrible people. Those are really the main signs, because we see parents elsewhere and grandparents elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And the fact that his parents, like if they were alive, they're not part of the Dursley's life. They never send presents to Dudley. They never come for a visit. But the bond that Vernon and Marge have kind of tells, I kind of read into it that I can see how they would be as close as they were having survived a troubled childhood. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So kind of reading between the lines and kind of applying these psychology papers that I was reading, it's the evidence became pretty clear with what we are provided in the text.
Mm-hmm. So I was thinking also about, you know, Smeltings, you know, the private school that they're going to send Dudley to, which is, that's where Uncle Vernon went, right?
Right.
To that same school. And, you know, you get some sense that there's a lot of bullying going on at that school
Yes.
because they got the smelting stick, and it's apparently it's a bully stick. You know, it's for poking
Yes.
people and smacking people with. And so I wondered if that is, you know, that's just another aspect of his life where maybe, you know, he had experience. I don't know. Maybe he was on the lower end of that totem pole. I don't know.
So one thing that's really interesting about that is that when Dudley got accepted in there, Vernon said that was the proudest moment of his life, that Dudley got accepted, which made me think, like, I thought of two possibilities there, is that if Vernon had been bullied while he was there and his memories of it are still that positive, that seeing Dudley go there is the proudest moment of his life, that tells me that his home life had to be really terrible if getting bullied by kids with sticks was such a great moment for him. Or he was a bully himself and he looks back at that time positively.
Yeah, maybe he was able to kind of understand that as a ladder to sort of strength or dominance.
Right.
And was able to employ it.
Yeah, because I do think that if he had been bullied at least for part of the time, and then, I mean, that would have drilled in this need to be normal and to conform to, I mean, as a child, as a student at Smeltings, he would have wanted to get rid of any perceived abnormalities so that he would no longer be bullied. And then that helped him kind of gain some aspect of control over his life by seeing how conformity allowed him to advance. That does seem to have shaped. I mean, when we see him at work, he is kind of a bully at work from what we see, shouting at people. So I can definitely see how he would have viewed that as a something that transformed him into the success that he became. And how it would be good for Dudley.
Yeah, very interesting. And when you think of him also as a parent, you know, he does not seem to do that kind of physical bullying with Dudley.
Right.
You know?
No.
His abuse toward Dudley is more the spoiling kind.
It's a totally different type of parenting model between the way they parent Dudley and the way they parent Harry. It's there's two different types of, you know, one is indulgent and the other is oppressive.
And I think the reason why he's like that with Dudley is because my theory on that is that he wanted to give Dudley the childhood that he never had. Like if his parents bullied him and were abusive and like, well, I never got any of the stuff that I wanted, so my son is never going to lack a thing. My parents had all these strict rules. My son will not have any.
And of course, his reaction to Harry is about his abnormality.
Right. And I think a lot of the way he perceived Harry and his family was because of what Petunia told him. She had a lot of bitterness toward Lily and the wizarding world in general. And assuming that I expect this would have carried on throughout her life and what she told to Vernon. If his wife is telling you, oh yeah, Lily and James are just, they're freaks. They dress weird. They do magic. Vernon's going to see that as abnormal. He has a very narrow view. So I think what she was feeding him really affected the way he viewed that world, including Harry. And the way Harry was delivered to him only confirmed that. I mean, who drops a kid off on your doorstep overnight with a letter?
I mean, at
the very least, have the decency to deliver the kid in person. I also have to think, like, what happens next with something? Because, I mean, there was the process of getting legal guardianship of Harry would have been had certain complications because his parents had just been murdered. Then, lo and behold, the Dursleys have their son, potentially making him a suspect, making them a suspect. Like, did you kidnap the kid and that they died during the – how you got it? This is pure speculation on my part. But getting the legal guardianship – like, Dumbledore did not have the legal paperwork when he dropped them off.
So
and
true.
That's something that they would have had to do afterwards.
I love that. The filling in the gaps of like the technicalities of what would actually have to happen to transfer guardianship there. Yeah. And you know, that reminds
even
me of, because Emma Nicholson had said the same thing about Petunia, you know, and that sort of unceremoniously a burden is placed on you and you weren't asked and you don't really have a choice and you're kind of threatened. I mean, we learn later that Dumbledore's note is a little bit threatening, even.
Take this kid or else.
And the fact that it's saying that, I mean, first of all, that's how Petunia found out that her sister had died, which is a whole separate issue there. But by explaining how this is the only way for Harry to be safe, means that there's people that are going to want to go after him, which means this normal life that Vernon had built was in danger. And we see in book seven, his life falls apart because of Voldemort. He has to abandon his career. He has to abandon his home. Dudley has to abandon his education because of Harry and the wizarding community. All of that just combined with what Petunia would have told him to begin with, to circle back to that I have a much easier time understanding why Vernon does not like the wizarding world, especially since even after getting Harry, I mean, the wizarding people, every interaction he has with wizards are not good. I mean, Hagrid disfigures his son and doesn't fix him and involves Harry in a cover-up, and then Fred and George disfigure him again and cause him to choke on his tongue when it gets engorged.
Yeah, that's a
The
really
house is damaged.
horrible scene, actually.
That's almost worse than the pigtail, to be honest.
I agree. I mean, and when the Weasleys showed up, we actually see that Vernon is standing in front of Petunia to protect her. This is before his tongue gets engorged. So again, we're seeing how he really does love his family, even if he doesn't know how to properly love his family. But yeah, I mean, so his son gets disfigured twice, almost dies one of the times, and the house gets damaged. His sister, I mean, Harry engorges his sister,
Oh, Jess, yes.
and then the Ministry. I mean, if you go with the stuff that Rowling posted on Pottermore and then Wizarding World, they altered her memory to make her forget it. So his sister gets damaged by wizards a couple times
Right,
in the same
punctured,
incident.
right? Yikes.
Engorged, punctured, altered her memory. And then having to abandon the life that he worked so hard to build. So if you look at all of this together, it's like, yeah, I don't blame him for disliking the wizards because there's no positive experience in his life from what Petunia told him and Harry being dropped off to the end of the series. It's just one bad thing after another.
Right. For somebody who is already predisposed to not appreciate that kind of, disruption of the natural order as he sees it, that the wizarding world represents, right? He's already kind of predisposed not to like anything that he considers abnormal. And then, just that, you're kind of talking about what motivates him as his love for his family and his desire to protect his family. And this seems to just put him at odds with the wizarding community just by default, and then with all these other things piling up, you're making me empathetic for Vernon. Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Yeah, so we did a reading, writing, rolling episode with Emma Nicholson on Petunia Dursley, and that's where we were talking about, Petunia's experience of this. And one of her theories was that Petunia was so horrid because of Vernon's influence. But I'm really interested that you seem to be suggesting that actually Petunia is the one who is prejudicing Vernon against the wizarding world, although he probably would have had that prejudice anyway, but that, she's the one who tells him, and he's kind of concerned about her reaction because he knows from her something about her sister and the strangeness of witches and wizards.
So I agree that he even, like, if Vernon had never even met Petunia and then interacted with wizards, he would have had a lot of issues with them. I mean, we see that like in the opening chapter of the series, when he sees them dress all the wizards in their robes, mm-hmm. he's like, he doesn't know that they're wizards and thinks that their people are just dressing funny. And that really bothers him. And there's a line in there where it talks about how he assumes that it's like young people that are doing this. Like, oh, he seems slightly forgiving of young people who dress differently, but then he sees people his age and older, and we're told that seeing them dress funny enrages him. So finding out that they existed and with the way they dress and that they were not part of normal society would have bothered him. But I think that if Petunia was not Petunia, things would have gone quite differently. Like, if she had positive things to say about the wizarding community, was able to kind of slowly walk him through the positive aspects of their society, and then also on the side had some discreet conversations with Lily to get them to dress in Muggle clothing when they showed up for a visit, I think that would have made the whole thing go very differently.
Yeah, because it does seem Petunia can manage Vernon.
Right.
And so mm-hmm. that's really interesting to see that maybe that dynamic is working, you know, where Petunia is the one setting the tone.
Because she strikes me as someone who has much more control over herself than Vernon does. He's got these huge rage issues that are just under the surface and at many times not that are just outright showing themselves. Petunia does not have those issues. I mean, she has her issues, definitely. And she does seem like she's, whenever there's wizards around, she always seems afraid. Or not always, but often seems afraid of certain things.
Mm-hmm.
But she just seems to be in more control of herself than Vernon does. And I definitely think that they feed off of each other. And
mm-hmm.
there are a couple times when she refers to herself as a Dursley, which kind of the way it was phrased struck me as odd, because it seems like she had completely rejected her Evans identity at that point. So it seems that she just completely embraced being a Dursley and being the type of normality that he is trying to have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They have, like you say, that mutually reinforcing. They're well suited to each other. Weirdly.
Yeah.
Or not right. Weirdly. It's totally normally.
Right. In their relationship, she's the one with, as limited as it may be, she's the one with the knowledge of wizarding society.
Mm-hmm.
That it exists, and with some knowledge of how it functions. And Vernon is just completely ignorant going into it. So she could have guided him either be more accepting or be less terrible about it, but we never see her do that.
Right, she just encourages, we do
see Vernon standing up for his family and defending them, and at the in when Harry is leaving them for the last time, Vernon does make an effort to try and shake his hand and say goodbye. He can't get himself to do that, but there's no interaction with Petunia like that. Like, she never hugs him, shakes his hand, or anything like that. So the fact that Vernon does that makes me kind of like Vernon a bit more than Petunia, if that makes sense.
Well, so, and you have to kind of wonder if Petunia's issue with Harry is part of what is also Snape's issue with Harry, is that how much he looks like his father.
Right.
You know, and to just behold him is to behold this person who is this symbol of taking your loved one away from you.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, Tim, you've pointed out the way that Rowling uses siblings for character contrast. And, you know, Lily and Petunia are a bit of a contrast. But also, you do distinguish, although they're close, you distinguish between Marge and Vernon. What's the effect of the contrast of, you know, these Dursleys and Lily? You think that they help us to understand the characters better, or do the siblings, I don't know, kind of bring out the worst in each other?
I think a bit of both, to be honest. I think being siblings, they would have grown up in the same house, same parenting style and everything. Even if one was favored over the other, I mean, I think kind of get the impression that that's what Petunia thought about Lily, that she was the favored child. But with Marge and Vernon, I mean, they're raised in the same family. They're both pretty terrible people, but Vernon is much more functional in society. He has his career, he has his family, and with his career, he was able to advance pretty far in the company to a high level. So it's not like he had the skills for that to move forward. And but Marge, I mean, all we're told about her is that she breeds dogs, that she breeds pit bulls, and the ones she breeds are pretty violent pit bulls.
Ripper, right?
Yeah, Ripper. Yeah,
who chased
Harry
Cuddly
in the backyard all night to the Dursley's delight, I think it said. So, something along those lines. Vernon is able to function in society in as limited of a way as he can. I mean, even to the point where he has a business dinner in his home and to make a sale, and then that's when Dobby disrupts it and all sorts of hijinks happen there. But I mean, that tells you that he's a successful salesman and has a certain charisma when he's at work. And for what Pottermore and and Wizarding World have as far as their canonical value is, I was reading a little write-up on Marge about how she's secretly in love with her neighbor, Colonel Fubster, but he rejected her because of how terrible she is. And so we see that there's that contrast there, that Vernon advances in his career, he gets married, Petunia is in love with him, they get married, they have a kid, and all Marge has is her dogs. Because she's not able to function with a career, apparently. She's not able to function with romance and with the family. So Vernon, as limited as it was able to gain some level of control over himself, saw that need for normality, and just became obsessed with it. So I think it does give us some insight into the character and into the strength that Vernon had, that he was able to achieve what he achieved in his life. He does have moments of insight and intelligence, because he was the first one to realize that the Dementor that attacked Dudley was there for Harry. Harry wasn't even the first one to realize that. And once Vernon said that, that's when Harry realized, oh yeah, they probably were after me.
Well, Harry's kind of thick sometimes.
Yes, he is.
That's so Harry Potter.
He is, but to say
they
that
wanted
he's
me.
Yeah, but to say that he's thicker than Vernon, take that to a whole other level.
So true.
Yeah, he's got a brain. He's got the work ethic, and he's able, as far as he knew, he had the normal life that he wanted, except for Harry, which was forced on him.
Right, right. Harry's this one element of abnormality in his otherwise controlled life.
I think that's one way that seeing these contrasts really allows us to understand Vernon a little bit further, because he could have turned out like Marge. He could have been even worse than Marge, or worse than he was and been like Marge. Mm-hmm. So
I guess it's kind of interesting when you think about the way that Harry is abused. It's often in the form of neglect and an attempt to hide him and to pretend he doesn't exist, right? That's how he spends his birthday in book two, pretending he doesn't exist. And that's the part that Vernon can't control, but he tries to do it. And that is the way that his abuse tends to manifest itself, and just pretending Harry doesn't exist. No presence, no recognition of you on your birthday, you know, cupboard under the stairs. And that maybe that is a feature of his sort of desperate clinging to this life that is supposed to be just utterly normal.
Marge is much more violent in her interactions with Harry than Vernon is. I think there's only like one, I think there's like one time when Vernon raises his fist to Harry when he's like particularly angry about something, but he never actually, I don't think he strikes Harry. There's one time, I think it was like a flashback or something, like talking about something that had happened where Vernon actually oh, it's when they're fleeing from their home because of the letters they were getting. Vernon actually strikes Dudley, and of all people, and then because he was taking too long, he like wanted to bring all his toys with him, and Vernon just wanted to get out of there as soon as he could. But we never actually see Vernon strike Harry.
Yeah, we don't see it, but I have to say there is one line, and I believe it is in book six when Dumbledore is standing right there. He's come to pick Harry up, and Harry sidesteps Uncle Vernon, and the narrator tells us that Harry does this because long experience had taught him to stay out of Uncle Vernon's arm's reach.
That's right.
And I think I think that's telling. But you're right. You're right. If she really wanted to drive home that this was a physically abusive relationship, you know, we probably would have had that depicted in more than just sort of a subtle narration.
Right. And I do get not wanting to, you know, have these long scenes about physical child abuse.
Sure.
That's,
right.
I mean, yeah.
That's a different book. That's a different book series. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I also think it's key to recognize that Vernon knows that Harry has got some power. You know, whereas Marge does not know this. Marge is being kept in the dark. And even if, you know, Vernon knows Harry's not allowed to use his powers, he also has been with Harry long enough to know that those powers come out anyway sometimes. And Marge does not recognize this. And I think that's the painful part of that scene where she's talking about Harry's mother in these derogatory ways. And the as the reader, you're sitting here going, oh, no. back up, lady, back up, you know, because you can see that the magic is like bubbling out of him. And it's a dangerous situation, really.
And Vernon also has to know that the, you know, there are powerful people in the wizarding world who also are watching out for Harry. Because, you know, of the way the letters came through, and then there's Hagrid and, you know, the threatening note from Dumbledore. So he knows there are some powerful people who, you know, maybe are even watching.
I think there's a scene at the end of one of the books where Mr. Weasley and a couple others, I think including Mad-Eye Moody, like have a conversation with the Dursleys about how they'll be like checking in on him if they, and and so that would have really driven it home that he, there are certain standards that he had to meet, I guess, with the way he took care of him.
Yeah, that's its own kind of, the surveillance part always, there's a lot of surveilling going on in the Harry Potter series that very, dystopian.
Vernon had a lot, like, that's just, that alone would give Vernon reason to dislike the wizarding community.
So when we think about this, I mean, Vernon is usually thought of as a villain and even maybe just pretty two-dimensional villain, I think. He's not even one of the more interesting villains of the series, maybe. But what do you think are the benefits of empathizing with Vernon, seeing him in more humanistic terms?
So I do think that looking at him like this does add some depth to him. It kind of makes him, it makes him much less one-dimensional. Yeah, because there's more going on to him than him simply being a jerk for the sake of being a jerk. I mean, he's trying to protect his family at times. He's, it's clear that he loves his wife, that he loves his son, and he is trying to defend his family at times. So I think, I mean, that adds a certain amount of depth to him that, like, say, Voldemort lacks. Like, for him, I just always got the impression that he was evil for the sake of being evil. I mean, especially being a half-blood. I mean, he didn't even have that. There was that hypocrisy in him getting supporters from people that believe that half-bloods should were lesser than them, and yet they embraced that ideology. Plus, being able to empathize with just villains in general I think is a good thing to be able to do, to ask why is someone acting the way they are. And if you're able to do that with someone like Vernon, it will hopefully be easier to do that for the jerks you meet in your real life. Like, why is that person mm-hmm. such a terrible person? Because in a book, the motivations are going to be laid out much neater than they will be in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So as reading this article about how, that talked about how people who read fiction are much more empathetic than people that don't read fiction. That really stuck with me about that, just because I've kind of seen that play out with some people that I know. Yeah, it's just outside of the books, it helps us to develop that skill.
Yeah, and would you say that Vernon experiences any kind of redemption by the end of the series, or is it kind of limited? I mean, you've given us some complexity to Vernon,
yeah.
But is he redeemed in any way? Is he grown in any way?
I think he has grown. I mean, there's that scene where he is saying goodbye to Harry, walks up to him to shake his hand, but can't get it, pulls his hand away at the last moment. So he's having this internal struggle where he goes from just outright being outright abusive and, I mean, really hating Harry and everything he represents to trying to, like, he seems to have some level of affection for Harry at that point, but he can't get himself to fully embrace that. And I do think the fact that Dudley was able to break free, like, mm-hmm. so I have hope for Vernon being able to break free after the series, because I think that Dudley is one of the very few people that Vernon will actually listen to about anything. So I think that once Dudley manages to heal to a certain extent, and as he becomes an adult, I would like to think that he encourages his dad to, and both of his parents to kind of heal as much as they can and get the help that they need. And I mean, this is kind of fan fiction / headcanon that I'm putting in here. It's Vernon shows that there is that struggle taking place in his head. And I'd like to think, because of everything else that he had managed to accomplish in his life, that he might be able to accomplish that. I realize I use the word might and possibly a lot in all of that. So that shows you how limited his growth is. But it's there.
There might be some potential there.
I think even the fact, you know, when I was first reading Deathly Hallows, I think I was surprised that they were even willing to pack up and go rather than just sit there like a bunch of dummies and get blown away. You know, I mean, I kind of expected them to get blown away because they refused to leave, because they refused to acknowledge the danger. And I think even just the fact that they acknowledge the danger enough to pack up and go, you know, shows that they have grown, or, you know, and Vernon especially, he's calling the shots.
Yeah. And we see him struggling with that. Like he wants to keep that life that he had, but he knows that he does seem to accept the fact that he's going to lose it if he doesn't leave. He has potential for significant improvement by the end of the series. I mean, especially since, If you look at Marge as where he could have been if he didn't work at improving himself, I mean, he had already come a long way. And I think he could go even further after the series ends.
Very interesting, Tim. You've given us a lot of food for thought. And it is time for us, again, to listen in on what is being said in the Potterversity staff room.
On the topic of Vernon Dursley.
Overheard in the Potterversity staff room.
Well, Tim, I was very disappointed that I did not get to hear your talk on Vernon Dursley.
Just because it was such
a fabulous topic.
Thanks. Yes, I missed yours too. So I'm a sucker for medieval stuff. So
Oh, well, it's on YouTube, so...
Yeah, that's on my to-watch list, so...
How did yours go? What kind of reaction or feedback did you get?
No one openly disagreed with me. I don't know about privately. So, I got some good questions. I basically made the case that Vernon was abused as a kid, and that explains why he's so terrible. And that underneath all of that, that there's a decent man buried under all the abuse, which is rearing its head, because he cares for his family, he protects them, and he even tries to shake Harry's hand at the end, but couldn't. Very abridged version of what I said. And he has legitimate reasons to hate wizards because they're terrible to him and his family. Everyone seemed to either agree or not voice any dissension to it. So, which was...
You made your case well.
Yeah.
Is the idea of Vernon having a past of abuse? I didn't get to see yours either. I'm just going off what I saw in the abstract. Is that based on some source, like on Pottermore or something, or that's just analysis?
What I started with the question of why is Vernon the way he is, and as just curious about the psychological reasons, and then basically it occurred to me, well, what if he was abused as a kid? Because both him and Marge are terrible people. Marge, I would say, is the worst of the two. That got me thinking about the cycle of abuse and how it can, the effort that's involved with kind of breaking free of that. And I was able to find a bunch of sources on it. So that, that was definitely nice that I was able to find something that went with my idea instead of having to just trash it out right at the beginning. So, it was more looking at the signs of the abuse rather than anything that said he was abused. Mm-hmm. On Pottermore or something. And I think there's quite a few signs that are there. And I also talked about the ways you can kind of break free of the abuse. One of which is trying to like regain a sense of normality and control over your life, which he does. He does that part by trying to just have that normal life. But it also, you have to have like a sense of perspective on your life, which I don't think he ever got, but Dudley did after the Dementor attack. So I think I made the point that Dudley managed to break free of the abuse with that huge push from the Dementor, but Vernon never managed to quite make it free. But set the stage for Dudley to do that when he got that push.
That brings us to the end of our episode today. Thanks so much, Tim Jennings, for being on the show with us.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks for having me.
We'll end this show with words of wisdom from Harry's found family, his godfather, Sirius Black, who said, "We've all got both light and dark inside us. What matters is the part we choose to act on. That's who we really are."
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Potterversity. Send us your thoughts on the episode or propose ideas for future episodes by writing to potterversitypodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show, consider leaving a review on iTunes, and be sure to follow Potterversity on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Potterversity is brought to you by MuggleNet, the number one Wizarding World resource since 1999. Emma Nicholson is technical director, and the show is produced by Laurie Beckoff. Our theme music is performed by The Town, featuring Sean Elsburn, Scott Hacker, Travis Princey, Ashley Shepherd, and Emily Strand, and produced by Sean Elsburn. I'm your announcer, Dr. Sarah Brown.
Until next time, class dismissed.